you never know what's going to happen in terms of acting. I like to think of it as an abusive relationship that you keep coming back to. It treats you so well, and then it goes back to the punching in the face, and you're like, oh my God, the rejection, it hurts.
Actress Adia Smith Erickson.
Adia Smith Erickson plays Ranger West in the new Netflix film Atlas.
I was kind of bullied in school, actually. Going from being in England to being in Sweden, where like I didn't speak the language at first, the first few years were a bit rough. But I just didn't feel like there really was a place for me in Sweden in the same way. It's like the only black kid in like 1,000 students. Finding my tribe out here and like figuring out things by myself, it's definitely helped me grow up a lot. And I had a weird moment of like, this might be it. I just signed all those waivers about injury and death, and there's no going back.
Do you feel a sense of wanting to live life more after that experience?
Life is too short not to like just enjoy yourself and do all these crazy things. We always reflect too late, right? Even in films, when they show people reflecting, it's that they're on their deathbed, right? Like there's always that dramatic scene where a character's dying and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry for all these things. But it's like, maybe you want to reflect before you get to the point where there's nothing you can do about it, right?
You were born in Cambridge. So tell me, how does one go from Cambridge, England, to Sweden, to LA?
Well, my mom was married to a Swede, and so we moved to Sweden when I was 11. Yeah, I just ended up kind of migrating this way myself in my early 20s, and I've been here ever since, kind of just like riding the wave. It's been fun.
It's really cool to hear about your kind of international background, because one thing that you mentioned about your mother was she was a complete badass, right? She was a former police officer, karate trained. So I'm taking it not many people messed with you in school.
No, they did. But then it was like you faced the risk of having to deal with my mother's wrath, basically. Like I remember one time when I was kind of bullied in school, actually, when I was younger. And I remember there was one time there was a girl that was about to like attack me, and my mom came to pick me up from school, and she just gave her a look and was like, I'm like, oh my God. And the girl just like backed away and was like, never mind, nothing happening here. And my mom just picked me up. So my mom definitely was like my hero growing up.
Well, Adia, I'm sorry to hear about the bullying experiences you had at school.
Honestly, going from being in England to being in Sweden, where like I didn't speak the language at first, it only took like a couple years to kind of get into it, because the kids are so malleable at that age. So it kind of, you're like a sponge, right? But yeah, the first few years were a bit rough though.
Well, I'm glad that you've made it here and you're here to tell this story, because for me, being the only Sri Lankan girl in the small community of Melbourne, Australia in Fairfield, on the TV, I would hardly see any Sri Lankan people. And the irony was that the first Sri Lankan person I saw on TV was named MIA, you know, missing in action. So tell me about your experience growing up and what you were seeing on screen.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, I started off in England where, like, I definitely had more exposure to different cultures, right? I mean, some of my closest friends over there were actually of Indian background, and like it was just like such a mixing pot in England. And then I definitely saw that kind of representation on television as well. And then going from that to Sweden, where it was kind of like, oh, there's no one that looks like me, you know? And it was just interesting. I mean, I booked a few commercials and smaller roles and shows there, but I just didn't feel like there really was a place for me in Sweden in the same way. I mean, it's slowly shifting, but it's still not quite there, you know? But like coming here again and then being like, whoa, there's more people that look like me, just generally. Because I mean, when I went to school in Sweden, I was like the only black kid in like 1,000 students, you know? Whereas coming here, it's like, oh, I see people all the time. Like, yay, I'm not alone. It's just really different. And yeah, and it's also reflected in television here too, right? I mean, you see what you see on the street is mostly what you see on screen too.
And what did it mean when we fast-forwarded all that time when you booked your first film? What did that whole full circle experience mean for you, where you didn't see much diversity in Sweden or on screen to you actually being the person on screen, being that representation?
Well, what was funny was, so my first film, like my first like proper SAG role that got me my eligibility and everything, was actually playing a Swede, like playing someone who spoke, they needed someone who spoke Swedish. This was in New York, actually. And I remember, like, so they had cast like a more Scandinavian looking person for like one of the leads. And then like mine was like a supporting role. And I was like, I sent it off thinking like, oh, they'll probably go for like a stereotypical Scandinavian looking person. And then I booked it and I was like, oh my God, okay. So basically my first role was speaking Swedish. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. It's ironic too how that ended up being your first film, right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering too, what was it that inspired you to pursue acting? Because you have a mum who's like a police officer and she knows her karate. You kind of went the other way. I'm like, stay away from law enforcement and beating people up. I'm going to kind of go on screens.
Well, funnily enough, though, my mum was an artist at heart. She always loved dancing and performing arts. And so, honestly, she kind of set me off on that journey. So I was in a musical performing arts weekend program from when I was 4, played the piano from when I was 5, like was dancing ballet, contemporary, all the things, ballroom. And that was all her, honestly, which is probably why when I graduated high school, I just kind of was like, do I actually want to do this or was it just chosen for me? And so at uni, I chose something completely unrelated. I studied Japanese, I studied teaching, and then I ended up helping out with the school production anyway. And I was like, oh, well, didn't get too far from that then. So yeah, I just went back to it and I was like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to take it seriously. And I moved to New York and just like, was like, here we go. Here's me just shooting my shot right now.
I love how you said, oh, I just thought I'd move to New York. A lot of people say, oh, that's on bucket lists for so many people. Obviously it was for me and I live here as well. So tell me about that process to moving to New York, because sometimes the experience isn't as glamorous as people may believe it to be. May have been for you, but I'd love to hear about your experience moving to New York.
Yeah, I have to say I didn't really like New York, honestly, going from being like growing up in Stockholm, Sweden, where we're a bit more in touch with nature. Yes, it's a city, but also like, there's a lot of nature around too. Going from that to like being in a concrete jungle, I did not like that as much. Like it just felt like the small patch of sky that I had, like you had to look up, you know? I was just like, this is not.
You get whatever sky you can when you're in those skyscraper central, right? I'm curious though, because I heard Sweden doesn't get much daylight. Is that a myth?
It depends on when you go. I mean, yes, for winter, like end of fall, autumn, winter time, there's not much sun. I remember going in school, like if peak winter time, you like literally you wake up in darkness, you go to school and it's dark. And then you're looking out of the classroom window at like maybe 2 and you're like, oh, there's light. And then by the time school's done, it's dark again. And it's just depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, though, during summer, the reverse is true, that like it's basically never dark during summer. So you can like be out all day and enjoy the light. It's beautiful. So, I mean, it kind of it evens out a little bit.
Did you grow to love New York or love things about New York the more that you lived here?
Yeah, no, it never grew on me. I mean, I don't mind visiting. I like visiting New York, but I'm thriving a lot more here in LA. Like this has definitely felt a bit more, I've felt more at home here. So I also just love the outdoors. And so here I can hike, I can go to the beach, I can do all those things. And literally 1 or 2 hours up, I can go skiing, snowboarding, like whatever, because like everything is just so close because I snowboard as well.
You snowboard too?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So now I'm kind of seeing your mum's genes kicking in, which I want to talk about. So the snowboarding, I've also read that you're starting to learn some stunts. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just kind of like a bit of an adrenaline junkie. So, I mean, I literally just went skydiving for the first time when I was in Hawaii like 2 weeks ago. And yeah, honestly, best experience ever. It was so cool.
As somebody who is petrified of that experience and may never have that experience in their life, can you walk me through step by step what it feels like to get on the plane and your feet leave the plane and then you're falling and then you don't know what happens? Can you talk me through that? Paint a picture for me, Adia.
firstly, I'm almost chicken out because like they have you fill out these waivers, right? And at the end of the waivers, it was like 7 pages where it ends with, this may result in injury and death. And you have to like sign your name underneath each page. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this potential injury and death element to it. And I turned to my friend who had done it before and I was like, I don't know about this. He's like, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. And then, but they weren't going again because they'd already been and like, you know, so I was just like, I was suddenly going by myself. And so I was kind of freaking out a bit. I was feeling nauseous. I was like, what have I done? What have I signed myself up for? But then once I was actually in the plane going up, I don't know, it was just like this peace. Like I just felt so calm. And then I watched the other two people jump before me because of course I ended up going last. And I watched them jump before me. And they say you can change your mind at any point. Like until you get off the bench, you're allowed to change your mind. I think you just can't safely change your mind once you reach the doorway. But I have to say the girl that I jumped with, she gave me no time to hesitate. We got off the bench and then we were by the doorway and we were out in no time. And I had a weird moment of like, I may have just like, this might be it, you know? I was like, I just signed all those waivers about injury and death and there's no going back. It was a weird thing of like, either we make it to the ground or we don't. And I just felt calm because it's like, there's nothing to be done about it. And like, it just allowed me to just feel so free and enjoy the experience. And I was just like looking around and it was so beautiful there, the coast of Hawaii, like just, and I was just like, I don't know. I just felt this like release. I was like, it just felt amazing. I was really enjoying it. I was just like, yes, here we go. And like, yeah, and we just like, we were gliding down so slowly. Because I was the last one down. So I got like to glide for the longest amount of time. And we made it down to the ground safely. And I was just like, but it was a weird thing. So it did cross my mind that maybe I should have texted my parents to tell them I loved them one last time before I got on the plane and I didn't. But, you know, I did tell them once I landed, I was like, hey guys, I jumped. And like, I love you guys. I made it. But yeah, it was just so, I don't know, I would do it again. It was amazing.
The first initial feeling of when your feet leave the plane and you're free falling is like, I could die. So, and then you wait for the serenity to kick in. I'm like, that's a very interesting mental space to be in when you're up there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because it's like suddenly you have nothing tangible around you besides the person behind you, right? That's the only solid thing. Because, you know, when you get scared, like even on a drop ride or on a roller coaster, you can hold on to the bar, right? But there was like nothing. I mean, I'm holding onto the parachute. Like they have you hold on to like the pack at first and then they tap your shoulder and then you release and hold like, so just like to help with airflow when you're like gliding down. But yeah, I mean, besides that, though, there's nothing. Like it's just really like, I'm just falling 14,000 feet down to the ground. It's like, here and we go. Like, kinda. I mean, yeah, it was just so thrilling. I don't know. But it really does kind of like leave that space of like all these things that we stress about in life. It's like, do I want this to be the end and that this is what I'm worrying about? And it's like, no, we got to the ground. I was like, nah, I need to reset. It was just, yeah, pretty cool.
So that's one way of resetting. I guess there's many other ways of resetting. Yeah, but that's actually, that's an interesting perspective too, because I think sometimes when we're confronted with death, whether it be we think it's going to happen or it may happen, that's when we really start reflecting. And sometimes I don't think humans reflect enough, Adi. I think we only tend to reflect at the end of the year. We're like, oh, a whole year's gone by. What have I achieved? And then you set all these goals, you start again, and then it's rinse and repeat, right?
Oh, no, definitely. I do think there's an element, like there's truth to that, that like we always reflect too late, right? Even in films, when they show people reflecting, it's that they're on their deathbed, right? Like there's always that dramatic scene where a character's dying and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry for all these things. But it's like, well, you maybe want to reflect before you get to the point where there's nothing you can do about it, right? Like you want to be able to like change the things that you're unhappy with. So you're not just like, this is it, this is the end. Let me just apologize for all the things that went wrong.
Do you feel a sense of wanting to live life more after that experience?
I just want to keep exploring new things and having new, like, exciting experiences. That's definitely something that's instilled in me now after this trip. But I ended the trip renting mopeds and, like, coasting. Like, we were driving along the coast And it was just amazing. I was like, this is, I want more of this, you know? Life is too short not to like just enjoy yourself and do all these crazy things.
What's the kind of beginner's adrenaline junkie activity to do?
Go-karting is quite fun because you can only get up to like 50 miles an hour and people don't generally bump into you that much. I mean, you do get jacked around a little bit, but I mean, that's unavoidable, unfortunately.
That probably just feels like lightning speed to me, but I like that. It's easing in, right?
I mean, 50 miles an hour on the road doesn't feel that fast, right? If you're driving your car, or it does. I don't know. I'm like, give me that speed.
And I'm like that driver who's like, safety is sexy.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is. Two hands on the wheel.
Adia, I want to kind of cross to your latest project, Atlas, on Netflix, because you worked with some pretty cool people, stunt people, you know, leading actors in Hollywood. What was that like for you going from, it's kind of a full circle moment, right? Because ironically, you played a Swede in your first movie role and now you could be a little bit more aligned with yourself. Tell me about that experience.
I still pinch myself that it actually happened. Going in there, realizing the size of this project, because I had no idea. I didn't know what I was stepping into, really, fully. And then, yeah, like getting to meet J-Lo, working with Sterling K. Brown, like these are just people that I've looked up to and admired. And so having the opportunity to work with them and see them in action, you know, it was just such an amazing opportunity. And the director was amazing. Happy to call him one of my friends now, actually, because of course, no duh, working on a sci-fi action film, you meet a bunch of fellow nerds. And I'm a huge nerd, actually. I used to work in a comic book shop and like I love graphic novels and all that stuff. So yeah, it was just like fun to like meet my people on set.
What was your favorite comic book growing up?
Oh, okay. So that's changed though. I definitely leaned more towards Marvel growing up. But nowadays, I am really into Brian K. Vaughan's Saga. And so that's probably my favorite currently. But I'm leaning a little more towards Robert Kirkman right now with the Invincible series.
Okay. So your nerd's really expanding across the...
I mean, it's been expanded for a while. Like, right. I mean, working in a comic book shop in New York, I definitely feel like that was peak nerddom, you know? But yeah, I very much enjoy it. I think it's such a... And so that's why it's such a fun experience to be able to work in this environment and, yeah, just be like, I'm in a giant spaceship.
I'm curious how you critique shows now with your acting background and now your comic book nerddom. What would you say is the best movie scene ever made?
Action-wise, right now, off the top of my head, of course, The Matrix comes to mind just because, like, there's some really cool scenes in the first Matrix film. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of films I like, honestly. I can say one of my favorite shows currently, just like because that currently fluctuates a lot. I really enjoyed Fallout. I only meant to sit down and watch one episode and I binged the whole thing in the day, like during the day. Like I really enjoyed it. So I recommend it if you haven't seen it yet.
I'm like waiting for Only Murders in the Building because I'm that nerd. I think you're more cooler than me. You now live in LA. You've kind of found, okay, this is where I can work. The sun, the weather agrees with you more. You can snowboard when you want to. How do you ground yourself in such a chaotic energy of a city?
I think, honestly, finding the things that you enjoy doing, like obviously acting is something that I really want to pursue, but I am finding that like not always focusing on acting, like finding those other things. I love roller skating along the beach, for example. I love hiking. I love climbing, you know, and finding the joy in other things and like using that to kind of ground yourself. And I definitely think that helps. I mean, I'm going roller skating with my friends on Sunday and it's going to be great, you know? And so, I mean, yeah, it's just finding the small things that you can kind of find enjoyment in. And that definitely helps center me a bit more. And also I'll go by myself. I think that's one thing that's been really interesting about moving out here is like the amount of, because like this was the first time I mean I have my cousin who's also an actress out here, but like she's also working and busy, so I mean a lot of times I am by myself, and it's like kind of finding my tribe out here and like figuring out things by myself a lot. And it's definitely helped me grew up a lot, you know, not having the support of, you know, the bulk of my family or my parents. But yeah, it's been an interesting ride and I feel a lot more stronger for it.
Tell me a little bit about what you've got coming up in terms of new projects. What are you up to at the moment?
The auditioning continues. I have another project that's going to come out sometime this fall, winter. It was an indie that I did a few months ago. I'm excited to see what it looks like when it comes out. It was a very different role and project for me. It's more of a drama film, like dramatic film and role. And I was playing a cancer patient and I've never done that before. And it felt a little close to home just because I've had like family members that have dealt with that. So that was actually quite a difficult role to play. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it looks like when it comes out.
I recently interviewed another actor and she said, auditions are like going on 100 job interviews and not really knowing why you didn't get the role. Would you relate to that statement?
Well, yeah. I mean, I like to think of it as an abusive relationship that you keep coming back to because it's like, you know, because occasionally it treats you so well and you're like, oh, that's what it feels like. And then it goes back to the, you know, punching in the face. And you're like, oh my God. Oh, the rejection, it hurts. But no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like you have to find things outside of it to like ground yourself and like find enjoyment. Cause like, you never know what's going to happen in terms of acting. Like it's really playing the long game. Right. And so I think you just got to keep going at it and hopefully it will pay off eventually.
Thank you for joining us, Adia. To be in Hollywood, you definitely need an adventurous spirit, so I think she has a bright future ahead of her. I want to thank you for joining me today. Your time and attention is something I am so grateful for. This podcast is a production of Ginny Media. If you had fun, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. I'm Ginny Sarasvati. See you next time at Ground Level in the Slow Lane.